2. Read. Read the following passages. Underline the important viewpoints while reading. 1. We should all grow fat and be happy. Here's a familiar version of the boy meets girl situation. A young man has at last plucked up courage to invite a dazzling young lady out to dinner. She has accepted his invitation, and he is overjoyed. He is determined to take her to the best restaurant in town, even if it means that he will have to live on memories and hopes during the month to come. When they get to the restaurant, he discovers that this ethereal creature is on a diet. She mustn't eat this, and she mustn't drink that. Oh, but of course, she doesn't want to spoil his enjoyment. Let him, by all means, eat as much fattening food as he wants. It's the surest way to an early grave. They spend a truly memorable evening together, and never see each other again. What a miserable lot dieters are. You can always recognize them from the sour expression on their faces. They spend most of their time turning their noses up at food. They are forever consulting calorie charts, gazing at themselves in mirrors, and leaping onto weighing machines in the bathroom. They spend a lifetime fighting a losing battle against spreading hips, protruding tummies, and double chins. Some wage all-out war on fat. Mere dieting is not enough. They exhaust themselves doing exercises, sweating in sauna baths, being pummeled and massaged by weird machines. The really wealthy diet mongers pay vast sums for health cures. For 2 weeks, they can enter a nature clinic and be starved to death for 100 guineas a week. Don't think it's only the middle-aged who go in for these fads either. Many of these bright young things you see are suffering from chronic malnutrition. They are living on nothing but air, water, and the goodwill of God. Dieters undertake to starve themselves of their own free will, so why are they so miserable? Well, for one thing, they're always hungry. You can't be hungry and happy at the same time. All the horrible concoctions they eat instead of food leave them permanently dissatisfied. Wonder food is a complete food, the advertisement says. Just dissolve a teaspoonful in water. A complete food it may be, but not quite as complete as a juicy steak. And, of course, they're always miserable because they feel so guilty. Hunger just proves too much for them. And in the end, they lash out and devour 5 huge guilt-inducing cream cakes at a sitting. And who can blame them? At least 3 times a day, they are exposed to temptation. What utter torture it is, always watching others tucking into piles of mouth-watering food while you munch a water biscuit and sip unsweetened lemon juice. What's all this self-inflicted torture for? Saintly people deprive themselves of food to attain a state of grace. Unsaintly people do so to attain a state of misery. It will be a great day when all the dieters in the world abandon their slimming courses, when they hold out their plates and demand second helpings.
2. I feel better with vegetarian food. I grew up in Texas, on double cheeseburgers with hickory sauce, chili, fried chicken, T-bone steaks, and eggs. Many people report that they lose the taste for animal foods after eating a vegetarian diet for a while. But it hasn't fully happened to me. I still enjoy the way animal foods taste and smell, but I usually don't eat them. Why not? Because I like the way I feel when I don't eat these foods so much more than the pleasure I used to get from eating them. I have much more energy. I need less sleep. I feel calmer. I can maintain an ideal body weight without worrying about how much I eat. And I can think more clearly, although some might debate the last point. I began making some dietary and lifestyle changes during my second year of college, and have been eating this way ever since. I wasn't worried about coronary heart disease at age 19. My cholesterol level then was only 125, and it still is. I began feeling better after I started eating this way, so I continue to do so. Eating this diet probably will help me to live longer, but it's not my primary motivation. Feeling better is. In my clinical experience, I often find that fear may be enough motivation for some people to begin a diet, but it's usually not enough to sustain it. As I've said earlier, who wants to live longer if you're not enjoying life? Since I began making these dietary changes in 1972, eating this way has become increasingly accepted. Beans and grains are becoming, believe it or not, high-status foods.
3. High-fat diet, little strength. You bring one of our football players in and put them on a stationary exercise bicycle and tell them to work as hard as they can for as long as they can, and you'll time them. Say the guy lasts for 8 minutes, and then he's just exhausted. Then for 3 days, you put him on a high-fat diet. He comes back in, goes on the bike, until last probably only 6 minutes. He's lost that much strength. Then put him on a high-carbohydrate, low-fat diet for only 3 days, and he'll probably go up to 12 minutes. It makes that much difference.
4. I feel great because I've lost all that extra weight. During my first year of college, I gained 40 pounds when I began throwing the javelin. For the next 20 years, I carried all of this extra weight and kidded myself that I was in good shape, since that's what I weighed in college. Now that I've lost all that extra weight, I feel great. People say all the time, "Well, how do you live without eating cheeseburgers, or this or that?" And I say, "You just don't. It's not even an option. It's not that hard once you get on it." The most difficult parts for me are the social aspects of eating. For example, hamburgers were hard to do without at first, because I identified eating them with fun times, sitting on the floor with the kids watching television, or in a fun place with people sitting around laughing, drinking beer, and eating burgers. It's the same at a tailgate picnic at a football game. It was hard, not because of the foods there, but because of the social factors. But once you understand that, then you can say, I can enjoy the social part without having to eat that food. It's more what you're doing than the food itself.
5. Weight Watchers. Jean Niedetsch was a professional dieter, a housewife who tried every conceivable slimming fad, lost weight with each one, then regained it thanks to her habitually promiscuous eating habits. In 1961, when she sought help from the obesity clinic run by the New York City's Department of Health, she was 38 years old and weighed 214 pounds. The clinic put her on a diet by Dr. Norman Jolliffe, best known for his prudent diet. Convinced that she couldn't stick to it alone, Mrs. Niedetsch invited some fat friends to form a group and meet weekly to make horror stories, secret midnight binging in the bathroom, and helpful hints, put that donut in the freezer to cool temptation. Established in 1963, Weight Watchers expanded into an international network of clubs, with a product line of diet drinks, sugar substitutes, and publications. The McDonald's of the reducing industry. My little private club has become an industry, wrote Mrs. Niedetsch, amateur nutritionist, in The Story of Weight Watchers, 1975. In 1978, the organization, with about $50 million in annual revenues and a cumulative membership of close to 2 million, was bought by Heinz Foods.
Lesson 9. Is it a good idea to control population growth in the world? Text. What overpopulation feels like. We moved slowly through the city in a taxi and entered a crowded slum district. The temperature was well over 100 degrees, and the air was thick with dust and smoke. The streets seemed alive with people. People eating, people washing, people sleeping. People visiting each other, arguing and screaming. People pushing their hands through the taxi windows, begging. People relieving themselves. People holding on to the sides of buses. People leading animals. People, 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 people. As we drove slowly through the crowd, sounding the taxi's horn, the dust, heat, noise, and cooking fires made it like a scene from hell. Would we ever get to our hotel? All three of us were, I admit, frightened. Since that night, I've known what overpopulation feels like. Statistics show that rapid population growth creates problems for developing countries. So why don't people have fewer children? Statistics from the developed countries suggest that it is only when people's living standards begin to rise that birth rates begin to fall. There are good reasons for this. Poor countries cannot afford social services and old-age pensions, and people's incomes are so low they have nothing to spare for savings. As a result, people look to their children to provide them with security in their old age. Having a large family can be a form of insurance. And even while they are still quite young, children can do a lot of useful jobs on a small farm. So poor people in a developing country will need to see clear signs of much better conditions ahead before they will think of having smaller families. But their conditions cannot be improved unless there is a reduction in the rate at which population is increasing. This will depend on a very much wider acceptance of family planning, and this, in turn, will mean basic changes in attitudes.
2. Read. Read the following passages. Underline the important viewpoints while reading. 1. Childless and happy that way. In a country where most people believe that a family is not a family without children, some young couples, especially those with a higher education, have chosen to keep their families to two members, husband and wife. "I can't afford to have a child," said Wang, a promising research fellow with the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences. Wang has been busy traveling abroad and has received scholarship offers from a number of American universities that would enable him to complete his PhD. He is a free bird who may leave the nest any day, and I've never cared much about a child, said Xiao Wei, Wang's wife, business representative of a French company in Beijing. Unlike the Wangs, Zhang and his wife have argued over whether they should have a baby. "When we were married 6 years ago, we decided to adopt a wait-and-see attitude on the issue. And after a couple of years, my wife said she wanted to have a baby, while I insisted we were just fine without one. We have been arguing about the matter ever since, and now that we are over 30, I think we're likely to end up in accordance with my wishes," said Zhang. "There are many marriages that should have long been broken. People just hold on because a divorce would hurt the children most, and the parents hate to face that prospect. So the couple sticks together and winds up torturing each other. A real happy family is a family that, without children, is still a happy family," said Zhang. Ma Jiang, who has opened a trading company and was instantly nicknamed Moneybags by his friends, said he would hate to be bothered with a child. "To me, being without a child, I am less bound by household chores and can concentrate on my business. My lovely wife is all I need, no third person," he said. Ma's wife, Xiao Lu, working for a government unit, could have quit her job and become dependent on her rich husband, but she decided against it. "I can't imagine what I would be like if I stayed at home, doing household chores and breastfeeding a child. I'd rather keep my independence at all costs," she said. "Whatever people say, I believe that to have a child means a lot of sacrifice. We're just not ready for that, fun or misery," Ma's wife said. Ho Mingkun and his wife, Luo Qian, said they weren't against having a child, boy or girl, if only the baby was physically well developed. "One takes a risk when having a baby. I've heard too many stories about children born with physical defects. Since there's no guarantee that the same won't happen to my baby, I think I'd better not get myself involved. People say, no pain, no gain. But for me, it's no gain, no pain," Luo said. The couple were classmates in high school and went to the same university in Shanghai. Now, they are working for a computer company in Beijing. Those who choose not to have children have to overcome some unexpected difficulties in defending their stance. Influenced by the traditional view that one's worst sin is having no descendants, most people still accept that a wife is not a good wife if she doesn't have a child. Though few Chinese believe in an afterlife, they do care a lot about growing old. For centuries, one of the purposes of having children, sons especially, was to have someone take care of the parents when they were old. Now, since both husband and wife are working, they will have a pension when they retire. What happens now is that the retired parents are supporting their adult children, Wang said. We're normal people, just like everyone else. We've just chosen to live our own way, which harms no one. I hope people understand us, Wang said.
2. 3 babies are born every second. There are over 3,800 million people in the world today, and the total is increasing at the rate of more than 76 million a year. United Nations experts have calculated that it could be more than 7,000 million by the end of this century. The population is growing more quickly in some parts of the world than others. The continents with the fastest growth rates are Latin America, 2.9%, and Africa, 2.6%. Asia comes third, 2.1%. But because its present population is so large, it is there that by far the greatest number of people will be added before the end of the century.
3. Population increase has wiped out the material benefits people have achieved. Sarah, is there a need to control population only in countries like India, Africa, Brazil? Those countries that we call the underdeveloped countries? Or is there a case for limiting population in Europe, for instance?
The reason one would have to limit population is because you're running out of food and you're running out of resources. The people in Europe and America consume a far greater proportion of the world's resources and the world's food than they do in India. So, population is directly related to, consumption and your general impact on the environment. If, as an individual, your impact is far greater than anybody else's, then that is the factor that's important, rather than how many people there are, or how many people can the world support. Now it's, obviously in that sense, it's possible to increase population if everybody's willing to, use less material, or eat less food. But it isn't if everybody's continually wanting more and more and more, and this is, seems to be the trend at the moment, higher and higher consumption, with at the same time a greatly expanding population. And the problem in areas which are poor and which have expanding populations is that they try and develop and try and get more material benefits. But as soon as they do this, the population increase has wiped out any benefits that they may have achieved.
But do you feel that this battle with a rapidly expanding population can be won?
The most sensible thing is to realize that you can't go on expanding human populations forever, and countries and individuals must decide to have a policy which would limit population. 4. An African woman says, "The men never talk about it." To us, children are the most important thing in life. When we marry, it is not above all to get a husband or wife, but to have children. I had my 13th birth only a few months ago, and most of my adult life, I have had to care for a baby, as well as do all my other work in the house and in the fields. For a long time, I have wanted no more children, but I keep having them as long as I am with my husband. A nurse comes to visit our village regularly. She holds meetings for all the men and women together to explain about family planning. Now, these are well-known facts to us, but still nobody in our village practices birth control. When we sit together with the nurse, everybody seems to agree that this is the right thing to do when a family had grown big enough to give the parents security in their old age, and there are enough hands to attend to all the daily work. But when we go home, the men never talk about it. My husband and I attend every meeting, but in our home, we have never talked about birth control. I desperately want to stop having more children, but this can only be done if my husband suggests it.
5. Free birth control techniques should be available everywhere. Peter, what sections of the population do you think free birth control techniques should be available to? They should be available to all sections of the community. Things are getting to such a pitch that I personally think that not only should birth control methods be available to all sections of the community, but indeed should be compulsory. There should be some kind of law which says that a family should not have more than 3 children, a complete maximum of 3 children. If they have 3 children, then they must be obliged by law, almost, to use birth control, if not, have various kinds of operation which make conception impossible. But surely this is very explosive in social terms. It's a very totalitarian notion, but the alternative, if we look around us in the world outside, is millions of people starving to death in places like India, and people suffering from malnutrition in other parts of the underdeveloped world, and indeed even in parts of the so-called developed world.
6. It's a world problem. The rapid rise in world population is not creating problems only for the developing countries. The whole world faces the problem that raw materials are being used up at an increasing rate, and food production cannot keep up with the population increase. People in the rich countries make the heaviest demands on the world's resources, its food, fuel, and land, and cause the most pollution. A baby born in the United States will use in his lifetime 30 times more of the world's resources than a baby born in India. Unless all the countries of the world take united action to deal with the population explosion, there will be more and more people fighting for a share of less and less land, food, and fuel, and the future will bring poverty, misery, and war to us all.
课堂欢迎你，
听力课堂欢迎你，
听啊点啊。